Welcome to That Entrepreneur Life, a podcast about entrepreneurship that takes you from idea to launch and beyond. Each week, your hosts, Andrew Lees and Clint McPherson, discuss different business topics aimed at adding value to any entrepreneur's journey.
Welcome back, everyone, to another episode of That Entrepreneur Life. I'm Clint McPherson, and today I'll be flying solo without Andrew. He had some business to take care of, but we're going to keep this thing moving. But with that said, I've got a special guest on the show today. He's a bespoke business coach focused on helping companies with under $10 million in revenue sell more. So if you have a small business and you want to sell more, you'll definitely want to listen to this episode all the way through. Before I introduce our special guest today, I want to remind you to subscribe to our podcast and to our mailing list through our website so you don't miss out on all the free resources we have to help you start and grow your business. With that said, I'd like to welcome our special guest today, Henry Doss, to the show. How you doing, brother?
I'm doing great, Clint. How you doing?
Good, man. It's a privilege to have you on. I've been waiting for this episode, and the more research that I've did preparing for the episode, and I got really excited. So I'm glad you're on today, my man.
No, I'm happy to be here.
So Henry, this is a staple question, and I say this almost every episode that we ask our audience, or ask our actual guests, not our audience, for our guests to kind of get a view on how your entrepreneurial journey started and what it is about entrepreneurship that really gets you fired up and moving every day.
All right. So I'll tackle the first part first. I started my first business 30 years ago, 1991. I started it as a side hustle. It's what I call an accidental business. And in my work, I'd say probably 8 to 9 out of 10 businesses, when you talk to people, are accidental business. So what do I mean by that? Friend of mine, college friend, was having trouble sourcing computers for one of his Fortune 500 companies. He mentioned it to me. I said, yeah, let me take a crack at it. So I kind of cobbled something together, made a couple bucks. And before you know it, he's feeding me business. A year and a half later, I looked at my wife and I said, there's a real business here. You know, I'm going to quit my job. And the rest, as they say, is history. And I've had a series of entrepreneurial businesses since then. As far as what it was that drove me to do it, I grew up around business people, doctors, lawyers, business owners, pretty much what I saw growing up. So I was kind of imprinted early. It's like, yeah, that looks really interesting, running your own. But it isn't until you actually go and do it that you realize, there's a lot of moving parts to this. A lot of stuff that until you're actually down there in the trenches, you just can't anticipate it.
Yeah, for sure. I would agree 100% with that. I think, again, taking that leap of faith and having the courage to do that, to move on and start your entrepreneurial journey, is one of those things. Again, you're going into the unknown, right? So I think a lot of people fear the unknown, and a lot of people are hesitant to step off that cliff or jump off the cliff, right? Because they really, it always sounds easier than it actually is, right? Because you don't see the additional moving parts, all the back end stuff that has to really go in it to make things successful for you. Because, you know, when you're working for a corporation or you're doing something inside of an organization and you're just the busy bee, you really don't know exactly. You're like, oh, I can do this, right? Like, this seems like it's just this and this is it, two or three steps and I'm good to go. Right. We'll put a cherry on top and now I got a business. But then you get into it and you're like, holy shit, like what's really going on? You know? So at the end of the day, I really think as an entrepreneur and to be successful, right. A lot of the stuff is figuring it out as you go, but you also want to make sure that you have something legitimate that you can start earning income and that you can start, like when you said, a year and a half into it or whatever, you figured out that this is a sustainable business model or whatever I got going on here. So no, I can actually quit my job, where some people are like, I'm doing this now. They quit their job and then they just struggle. They're on the struggle bus the whole time.
Well, you know, people have to realize I quit a $60,000 a year job. This is 30 years ago. And my first year in business, I made $12,000. right? So yeah. there's that.
There is.
It took a solid 3 years before I could replace the salary that I left behind. And that's not even including the benefits. Now, all of a sudden, I'm paying for the benefits. You know, right. You live in what I affectionately call cubicle world, right? And you fill out a W-9 and you get your paycheck, right? It gets direct deposited. There are so many gears and moving parts that go on for that W-9 to transform itself into money in your bank account. You've got a whole HR department. Well, now you set up your business and it's like, I am the HR department. And that's just one little piece of your business, right? Yeah. There's operations, there's sales, there's finance, the whole bunch of stuff. And it's now all on you.
Right.
And that can be overwhelming, which is why a lot of people will never go out and actually do it, right? That fear that you mentioned becomes paralytic. It's like, I don't want to do this. You know, they go into the deer in the headlights look and say, what the heck did I get myself into? Oh, once you get past that point, however, and pick yourself up by the bootstraps and say, well, you know what? Let me remind myself why I did this, right? What was the driving motivation? Don't lose sight of that.
Right.
Because you'll figure it out. You will. You'll get some help from people, right? I'm a professional coach. Ordinarily, when you're first starting out, you can't afford that. It's too expensive, right? But as your business starts to mature, it's like, oh yeah, now I can start to take some of this income and use that to hire the resources that I need to really start to level up.
For sure. I mean, and I agree with that 100%. And when you look at it, like you said, starting off, probably going into and finding a professional coach, right, is going to be out of somebody's league as far as affordability to a degree. But then there are individuals, right, that will help you for a little bit lower end that, again, could be a mentor, somebody that really, when it comes down to it, man, as entrepreneurs, we don't need to be afraid to ask questions, right? Like, hey, what's working for you? Like, get a group of friends, get people that are striving to just level up before you go get your coach. And then just ask questions and see what works and get together from time to time and just say, hey, this is a system or this is a process, an SOP, a standard operating procedure that I'm implementing to my company. And I've seen it really improve the way, whether it's me and my employees work, my little team, whatever you got at the time. And sharing and again learning from people, because once you realize that as being an entrepreneur can be a lonely place, right?
It is a lonely place.
It's like I'm standing on this island,
and now you're working from home. You're not even in an office, so you talk about being cloistered. I mean, we one smart thing, I'll pat myself on the back, is we convened a board of advisors pretty much from the get-go. And we had quarterly meetings with them, and we take them out to dinners. You know, sometimes it was just, you know, dinner and beers or whatever, very informal, very casual, but it was an opportunity to leverage other people's expertise for a minimal cost. Right.
Right.
Lots of that. I joined Entrepreneurs Organization. At the time, it was called YEO, right? Young Entrepreneurs Organization. They've since rebranded, but really good organization with all entrepreneurs, all kind of swimming in the same ocean. There's tons of stuff out there, but you have to ask. Sure. I've met a lot of entrepreneurs who have this sort of arrogant belief that they know everything and they have all the answers.
Right.
Call it what it is. And you need to have a certain amount of that. I call it entrepreneurial arrogance. You really do have to have that sort of headstrong idea that says, I'm going to succeed. I don't care what people say, right? I'm going to do this.
Sure.
But you can't do it to your detriment. You're just not going to have the answer to every question that you're going to face.
Right.
Especially early on in the journey. But sort of like the X-Files, the answers are out there, right? You know, but you got to go find them. It takes work.
100%. So, Henry, I mean, when we talk about you being a professional business coach, right? Like, what is it about books and courses that just don't seem to work for most entrepreneurs? And why is a coaching program like yours so much better?
Well, think about it this way. You went to school. Most of us, if we graduated from university, you did 17 years of schooling, right?
Right.
And there's really three parts to that. There's the curriculum, which are your books and such. There's your classmates, like we're talking about finding advisor that you can leverage and create study groups. And then there's the teacher. So imagine, if you will, what school would look like if you didn't have teachers. Pretty hard to imagine.
Yeah.
I've said if we didn't need teachers and such, if it was only books and learn at home and courses and videos and stuff, we could save a boatload of money here in this country and just lay off all the teachers and just have these buildings and fill them up with books and let the kids go have at it. What do you think that looked like? I mean, that's just chaos and anarchy. Yeah, I'm the father of three boys, who are two have graduated college and one's about to start his junior year. So I've been through all of the various things schooling wise. Think about what the teacher's role is. Instruction, maintain order, answer questions. It goes on and on and on. It's an incredibly job, very, very entrepreneurial.
Right.
In fact, because of budgetary situations, I read a statistic that says that the average teacher in America will spend $500 out of their own pocket in school supplies for their students.
Yeah.
And when you think about what they get paid, that's almost criminal.
For sure.
So I don't believe that there is any substitute for a one-on-one relationship. And I do one-on-one coaching. I mean, I run a mastermind groups that are around finance because I wrote a book about finance, and those are group coaching, but they're small groups, but they're still not a replacement for a one-on-one coaching relationship. But you got to find the right coach. You got to find the right person. I'm not the be all and end all to everything. I say I'm a bespoke, which basically means custom.
Right.
So my particular vision of how this relationship would work is I need to adapt to you. I've had a very eclectic mix of different customers and clients over the last 10 years. In fact, I had them all to dinner once when I was at a conference in Bangkok, actually. And there was a conference and I had a lot of clients who had flown in from all over the world. So we went out to dinner and I looked around the table and I said, this is about the motliest group of people that I have ever seen in my life. And the only common relationship was that they were all my clients.
Right.
And I think that's magnificent. But it puts a lot of pressure on me to be able to adapt to their style. And then be able to maybe massage it just a little bit to get them to think a little differently.
Yeah.
So if they're linear thinkers, sometimes I got to throw some nonlinear stuff at them just to get them to stretch themselves.
Right.
Conversely, if somebody's like all over the place and it's got shiny object syndrome, it's like, dude, we need to find the critical path and we need to work to stay on that.
For sure.
Because shiny objects are not serving you.
Right.
They're not serving your business. They might be serving you psychologically, but they're not serving your business, right?
For sure.
We know because we have numbers in front of us to tell us that you're not serving your business.
Right. 100%. I think shiny object syndrome is something that I know a lot of individuals struggle with personally, that it's just one of those things. It's like the next big, it comes up and they're just targets, right?
They're just tattoo FOMO on their forehead because it's like, oh yeah, what's over there? It's like, what was that movie where the dogs were, I think it was Up, where the dogs, every time they saw a squirrel, they'd be in the middle of a conversation, then they go squirrel.
Exactly.
I do that with my wife because she's very ADD. So we'll be in a store and I'll say, don't squirrel out on me.
Right.
Okay. Because it'll take 3 hours to get out of a store because, oh, look over here. Oh, look over here. Oh, look over here.
Yeah.
Right. It's like there's a time for that. But most of the time when you're in business, there's a critical path that you need to follow.
For sure.
If you want to start, working on the top line or cutting expenses or whatever, can't be flitting all over the place. Got to be a little bit focused. That's a common trait, I can say, of entrepreneurs is they're focused when they need to be focused.
Yeah.
And they know when they need to be focused, or the coach will remind them, you need to be focused. There's a time and a place for brainstorming new ideas and being creative and doing all that stuff and taking in a lot of input.
Right.
But most of the time is going to be spent trying to do the business of the business.
Yeah. So since we mentioned the word bespoke, right, you're a custom, you know, business coach. When it comes mm-hmm. down to being able to customize packages or customize, how does that work when it comes to, how do you know you're the right fit, or if somebody that's looking for coaching is a good fit for you as an individual? Because again, if you're customizing things, right, what are some red flags that might pop up for you or somebody else looking for coaching? Like if they're not a right fit for you, do you continue to like recommend them down a different path, or how does that work for your process?
Well, my process is pretty simple. I try to keep things as simple as possible. So I only ask for a 3-month commitment.
Okay.
And you can quit anytime after that. I don't even require notice for when you quit. A lot of coaches will ask you for a month or two. And again, I learned all this stuff sort of organically. The way I've run my businesses is I'll go out and grab all the feedback from the world. When I did my year of coach training with Coachville, there were a lot of things that I liked about it, but there was a whole bunch of stuff that said, I'm not going to do this because this is too limiting. It doesn't take into account my entrepreneurial experience. You know, unfortunately, 9 out of 10 coaches have never run a business other than a coaching business. Right. I've run a whole bunch of different types of businesses. So it's really, really important during that first 90-day period for me to go through a certain checklist of stuff that I need to know. Some of it's just nuts and bolts stuff.
Right.
It's balance sheet, income statement, statement of cash flow. I'm writing a new book with the unlikely title of Codfish. And I won't go through the whole long-winded story of Codfish, but it grew out of a coaching session years ago. Codfish stands for customer support, operations, development, finance, infrastructure, sales and marketing, and human resources. I call those the 7 silos of any business, right? Every business has those 7. It doesn't have 6, doesn't have 8, it has those 7. Anything that you can describe that goes into a business will fit into one of those silos.
Right.
So the idea in that first 3-month period is for me to really understand where you are in terms of all these various elements of your business. And then the next level is, how are they working together? Now that's just the business side of it. And then the other side of it is what you were mentioning is the entrepreneur themselves, right? How do they work? Are they a visionary? Are they an operator? Are they a worker bee, right? Where are they? What are their tendencies, right? Are they the type that is constantly has their blinders on and head down and can't see the proverbial forest through the trees? Or are there someone who's just always doing, you know, looking at everything and can't focus, as we just talked about? Or are they somewhere in between? Right. Are there some things that they just slay the beast? Like, I've had clients who are freaks about numbers. We can give you every number, MRR. They've got these, you know, we've got these shared Google Sheets that's got more data than you can shake a stick at, right? Others, not so much. But they know their messaging. They know their sales. They know their avatar cold. Right. They know who it is and they don't, and they learn. I don't waste my time with people who do not fit the avatar, the sales profile.
Right.
Where I've seen other people who are great at running the operation of the business, but it's like, why are you wasting your time trying to nurture this lead where I can already tell you it ain't going anywhere?
Right.
Right. And why are you hiring salespeople who are out there taking tons and tons of meeting but never closing?
Yeah, right,
that gives you the illusion that you've got something growing in sales and marketing, but the reality is something very different. All of that is going to happen within 90 days. Now the other side of it is the client has to figure out whether they like me. Like I said, I'm not the be-all and end-all, They got, I'm a New Yorker. I'm a no bullshit guy. Pardon my French. I have no compunction about calling you out. If I think you're doing something objectionable, I'll do it in a coachy way. We live as coaches, we live in a world of what we call judgment. I'm making air quotes, judgment-free awareness. I'm not here to judge you, right? I'm not here to judge you at all. Right. I am here, but any ideas that you may have or things that you may want to do, we're going to have to chop those up to see if they make sense. But ultimately, the decision is going to be yours. It's your balance sheet. It's your income statement. It's your company. I got no skin in the game other than the fact that you pay me.
Right.
For my expertise, right? That's how that is. And if it doesn't work, we're not attached to the hip.
Right.
You can kick me to the curb. I tell people I'm easy to hire. I'm even easier to fire.
Right. I love it. I mean, that you answered that question spot on. So what is the single most important thing you tend to help entrepreneurs with to get over the hump and unlock growth potential within their businesses?
Part of it is figuring out what's your Achilles heel, right? So looking at those seven silos, let's say you're a small business. Let's say you're an entrepreneur with a bunch of, FTEs, right? Full-time equivalents, for those who don't know that particular acronym, right? So they may be a bunch of Upworkers, or they might be some folks in, I work with a lot of people who run remote teams and such. So you've got to manage that little flock, but it's really just you, right? At an early stage. So if you look at those seven silos, I challenge most people to define for me two of them are really going to be your core strengths. Three of them, you're going to say, well, I'm okay at it, but I'm not really like the top operator around. And one or two of them are going to be your Achilles heel, right? I've had people say, I hate finance.
Yeah.
Sometimes you got to wonder, well, the purpose of the business, I think, was to make money.
At some point, right?
At some point. So we got to give you at least enough knowledge to be dangerous. But certainly, you don't have to act as CFO for your company, because anything that you don't want to do, I guarantee you there are scores and scores and scores of people who love to do it, right? My wife's an entrepreneur. She hates to do collections. I do her collections for her because I happen to be very good at it. And I actually kind of enjoy it, as crazy as that may sound. But most people I talk to, entrepreneurs, they hate collecting.
Right.
They're like, well, this is my good client. I just spent a lot of time being nice, nice, happy, happy, landed them as a client. I can't all of a sudden go back to him and say, hey, you owe me a bunch of money.
Yeah.
I have a phrase I use. I said, you can't, as a small entrepreneur, you can't wear the gray hat. So what does that mean? I'm wearing the white hat when I'm trying to get you to be my client. Right. But then when you owe me money and I need to put the black hat on, I don't want to do that.
Yeah. Right? There's no in between,
It can be pretty, pretty binary. And I remember my wife years ago when she had some clients, a bunch of clients who owed her money. And she said, don't make them mad. These are my good clients. I said, these guys are 120 days out. If this is what a good client looks like, show me a bad one.
Yeah.
Right? I'm not the bad guy. There is no way on God's green earth that you can make me the bad guy when I'm asking you to pay me money on a legitimate bill.
Right.
There's nowhere on planet earth can you make me feel like the bad guy. Yet a lot of entrepreneurs don't want to go that way.
Right.
And then I ask him, are you running a charity? If you want to run a charity, run a 501(c) corporation.
Right, exactly.
And throw the profit margin to the wind.
Right.
Right. I mean, you cannot stay in business if you don't make money. You can't hire good people if you don't make money. Right. I look at that also as a consumer. I like to support, the mom and pop businesses. But I'm not going to hondle them down to the last nickel. Yeah, I may have to pay more. But if I pay more, if they're a good business person, that should give them more money to hire better people to give me better service. And I'm willing to pay more for better service. What I'm not going to pay more for is crummy service.
Right.
Right?
Exactly. 100%. I think when it goes into one... Like, yeah, I agree that a lot of people struggle in the collections department, right?
And
it's one of those things. It's just, man, if you realize how much you're missing out on and you just do the right thing, right? That is the right thing. When somebody's paying you or supposed to pay you for a service, or you're providing a service, it's assumed, right? But at the end of the day, you can't just say, well, they'll just pay me when they can. You know, it has to come down to a time.
I'm not saying to be mercenary. I mean, look, the pandemic came along and people
were
struggling.
100%.
Right. And I'm not saying that you need to be Ebenezer Scrooge and have to turn the screws on people. You have to have a certain empathy and you have to be willing to work with people.
Right.
But conversely, they need to be willing to work with you. Right. There's nothing wrong with going out and I'm not saying that I immediately, when I have to do collections with her good customers, immediately say, I'm going to sue you. And I've sued plenty of people in small claims court in New York and other places. No, I start with a kinder, gentler approach. Hey, I noticed you're really far behind. Can we set up a payment plan? Right. I'm not adverse to that.
For sure.
Show me something. Give me a good faith payment, even if it's $100.
Yeah, exactly.
Right. No, I'll listen. I'm a coach. I'll listen to your sob story. I have no issue with that. But you've got to make an effort. What chaps my rear end is when I get ghosted.
Oh, that's the worst. Right.
Now, that's a different ball game. Right. So no one's telling you that you got to go out there and squeeze every nickel. Like that.
Not mafia style.
No. We're not out there breaking legs.
Brass knuckles.
And things like that. So again, this comes back to the idea of, right, in the early part of that relationship, I got to understand how you operate.
Yeah. Right.
Are you a pushover? Right. If you're a pushover, sticking with the finance thing, we may need to put some things into place that can work around that. I'm not here to solve that and make you like a tough guy if you're a pushover.
Right.
But what I am going to suggest to you and what we'll work on is let's come up with a little better terms and conditions on your invoices. Maybe we can get people and send people to prepay, or maybe we simply say, look, we're just going to take credit cards. Like after being in business for 30 years and being burned many, 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 many times, I don't offer anybody credit for anything.
Right.
At all. I mean, if I have a coaching client and they fail to pay me for an oversight, I send them a note, you know, your credit card kicked out.
Right.
You know, if that becomes a protracted thing, as they say in New York, no ticky, no laundry, right? I mean, it's just how it is. And I have no compunction about saying, hey, once you get your finances together, we'll resume our coaching relationship. But, I don't work for free and I'm not a bank.
All right.
I'm going to loan you money. Right. But then I've worked with people and they say, listen, I just can't afford this. Can we cut the price for a little while until I get back on my feet? It's like, hell yeah, let's do that. Right. I get it. I understand that.
Yeah, 100%. I've been down that road with several clients. I run a digital marketing agency. Mm-hmm, and sure. So when this pandemic kicked through, man, I had a lot of customers wanting to go their separate ways just for the simple fact, because that was the easiest thing to slash at the time is the marketing budget.
Easier to fire, right?
Exactly. It was one of those like, all right, guys, like, we love what you're doing for us, but right now, you know, budgetary cuts are happening and we're trying to figure out if we're even going to have a business at the end of this thing. So we got to make sure that, you know, we're doing the best. And so I was really reasonable with my clients. Clients that wanted to pause and then resume later.
Sure.
I was more than willing to do that. Clients that wanted to just say, hey, I don't even know if we're going to be able to come back. We're switching over. Somebody just bought us out. Now this happens. So but we'll stay in touch. And then I also had clients that say, hey, can you work with me? Can you reduce a few fees that you're doing and we'll get you back on the back end? But see, that's after years of trust and building relationships.
Of course. People. And you don't want to squander that.
Exactly.
Right. So exactly. A little forbearance is perfectly reasonable. 100%. But this is, again, this is just one silo that people have to operate. You know, I wrote a book about money, so I talk about money all the time.
But in staying in the finance lane, though, because I find it interesting, right? Entrepreneurs, you said at some point, just like you mentioned, it's like, why did you start this? I hope at one point in time or somewhere along your journey, you realize it is to become, you know, whether it's financially free or at least be able to pay your bills, right? So that's the one thing. So finance is a huge thing. So my thing and what I've ran into is how financially uneducated we actually are, just as individuals, not just as entrepreneurs, but just like individuals alone. It goes a lot into what Robert Kiyosaki teaches with his side of stuff with Rich Dad, Poor Dad.
With the Rich Dad, Poor Dad, exactly.
Yeah, but I mean, financial education, man. I mean, we are struggling in that department. And so I think it does, at some degree, play into the burdens of like collections too, to where it's like, you know, a lot of people are timid and scared to approach people on that.
They don't want to lose their good clients, right, because they went and asked them for money that they legitimately owe them. Right. Look, I wrote a 432-page book called FQ Financial Intelligence, and I sell a course around it. And it's designed not specifically for entrepreneurs, although Chapter 17 is about entrepreneurship, but it's everything that I felt people needed to know. My tagline is everything you need to know from your first savings bond to your last will and testament.
Right.
Basically 40 years of my adult life, and I wrote it all out, and I built it as a course to teach it with people. I give the book away for free. I mean, your folks can just go to henrydoss.com, and right there, that's my personal site, and right there on the front page, there's a link, and you can download it for Book Baby for free. Nice. Can't do any better than that.
For sure.
The course is not free. But the book, there's a lot of real interesting information in there. Depending on your age, some of it may or may not apply. And when I say not apply, it may be, you know, I talk about Social Security. If you're 25, you're probably not thinking about 40 years down the line, which is not to say that you shouldn't at least be thinking somewhat about it, because let's face it, you're paying into it quite a bit of money, actually. So it's important to at least have knowledge about a lot of the financial levers that that both directly and indirectly affect your life.
Right. Love it, man. So that free resource, guys, go check it out. We'll definitely have it downloaded on our end for sure. Mm-hmm. So Henry, I mean, this conversation has been extremely interesting. And another question is a staple on our show is really from the highs and the lows that you've experienced as an entrepreneur, what has been the most single difficult thing about being an entrepreneur? And again, it doesn't have to be one single thing. I know a lot of our guests are like, man, we can go on for days about this. But is there something that really sticks out to you that you would say was the most difficult thing for you?
Well, I've had two partners in my life. One I had for about 10 years, that college friend who was feeding me deals.
Right.
We were business partners for 10 years. We had two businesses together. It ended very badly. And then I had another partner in the real estate business, and he jumped off a bridge on purpose and didn't survive it and left me in a real shit show. I wrote about it in my book. I don't want to go too far down that rabbit hole. So for those of you who have partnerships, or thinking about maybe looking for a co-founder or some other thing like that, it's great when it works.
Right.
But I'm a solopreneur now, and probably will be, unless, you know, somebody comes along with something that's just really compelling. When it works, 1 + 1 = 10 when you complement each other. And for, I would say, the first 8 years of our business partnership together, it really did. But when it ended really badly. And that can happen. So I guess the watchword is, be careful about who you bring in as partners, whether it be doing an equity raise, right? If you want to maybe go out and actually find, say, a technical co-founder, if maybe your strength is sales, set up some ground rules, set some expectations from the get-go. They're going to pivot. They're going to move. Yeah. They're not going to be chiseled in granite, but at least it's something. At least it's something that you can kind of go back on and say, listen, these were the ground rules. Maybe we need to update them. It's certainly best practices to have a buy sell. I didn't do that with my first business deal. We were friends. My partner said to me, well, look, the way we'll operate is we'll agree to agree or we'll agree to disagree. So unless we had unanimity about something that we wanted to do, it didn't happen. And that worked well until it didn't. So that's one of the tougher things. And the same thing applies for your spouse or significant other or life partner or whatever the cool kids are calling it these days. I got a wife of 30 years. So that one's easy. Right. Same woman. So get them on board.
Yeah.
Get at least some tacit buy-in and support, because you're going to need it. I mean, I would have had a much more difficult time quitting my job 30 years ago and setting up shop if my wife wasn't working and, you know, making good money.
Right.
So we didn't see even going from 60,000 down to 12,000, we did not see a significant drop in our lifestyle. Well, you've got to be aware of the fact that 3 years is an aggressive timeline to replace your salary from your business. It just is. Not saying it's not doable.
Right.
I'm not patting myself on the back for being a hero, but I just know from my experience of talking to people and working with lots of entrepreneurs. You want to be able to use that money to hire people and grow your business for a future payoff. But while that's happening, you don't want to live like Gandhi.
Right.
Because that gets old. And I'm a bit of a time freak, and I just turned 62, and I'm at a point where it's like, and I say to my wife, I said, listen, I got maybe 20 decent years left if I'm lucky. I'm going to spend every minute like it's the last minute that I have.
Right.
Because I got a lot fewer minutes forward than I have behind me. Right. Don't squander that time.
Yeah.
Right. Live a life. Do the things you want to do. Sure, there are going to be sacrifices that you'll have to make when you're making that entrepreneurial journey. And they may or may not pay dividends until many years later. But look at those ahead of time. Don't let those hit you upside the head later. Try to anticipate as many things as you can. In my book, I think it's chapter 2, I call The Thick Green Line, where we plot your age versus your net worth. And the important thing is, if you're 30 years old and you just got married and maybe have a baby, well, you have all these contingent liabilities. You have all these things that are going to come down the pike over the next 30 years, paying for college and funding your retirement and maybe subsidizing your parents. I know plenty of people who subsidize their parents because they didn't make enough money.
Right.
Do you want to be blissfully ignorant about that? Or do you want to swallow hard and look at what's ahead of you? Right. People say ignorance is bliss. It sure is. But I tell you what, it's really bad in hindsight when you look back and say, wow, if I'd known this 20 years ago, I could have made a couple of simple decisions.
Yeah.
That would have paid me enormous dividend if I'd only known.
Right. So. No, 100%. And so, Henry, with this one last question, as we wrap up this episode, I mean, and you left a lot, you just introduced us to a lot of golden nuggets right there. Answering that last question. But if you could leave our listeners with one piece of advice, what would it be?
One piece of advice. There's another little thing on my DOS Knowledge website, which is my main business site. And you can get there if you go to henrydoss.com, just like the first link that says business coaching. I wrote 5 reasons small businesses fail. Right. People say it's not a great headline. People don't want to read about failure. But I said, I don't care. That's what it is.
Right.
And the number one, I'll cut right to the number one reason. Number one reason is idea. Mm. Right. So if you're a entrepreneur and you've got an idea for starting a business, one, I applaud you. Go do it. We need more entrepreneurs. And now is the golden age of entrepreneurship. It just is. The barriers to entry with all the SaaS products are out there. I mean, we had to move heaven and earth 30 years ago when we started our first business. There was no internet.
Right.
It just didn't exist. No cell phone, or barely working cell phones, none of this stuff. So you have an opportunity that I would have given my eye teeth for 30 years ago to start your business. But remember, just because you have low barriers to entry means everybody else does too.
Right.
You are in a pitched battle every day for market share and for everything else. The reason small businesses fail is your idea sucked. So you have an idea for a business. I tell people you need to beat the crap out of that idea. You need to find people who hate everything, right? Everybody has a friend who hates everything, right? Go find that person, pitch the idea, and let them rip it to shreds. Just do, you owe it to yourself to do that. And don't get discouraged, because your job now as the entrepreneur is to determine whether their arguments are valid or not, right? Are they valid, or are they just, is it just the angry guy who's jealous or whatever it might be?
Right.
If your business idea can survive going running through the gauntlet there, you might be onto something. So, you know, don't let the naysayers say otherwise, but go find the naysayers, because trillions of dollars have been saved, some of it my own, in people not executing stupid businesses.
Right.
Because you wanna learn how to not be an entrepreneur. Be an entrepreneur with a stupid business idea and then get burned.
Right.
A lot of people never recover from that. So take that time, because there's a zillion ideas out there, but they have to pass muster. And I'll leave one last thought. Since we talked about finance, and we can wrap that in a bow. You really want to look at two factors, cash flow and gross margin. You want to look at how those play in. Almost any business can operate, even crummy idea businesses, if you can master cash flow and gross margin. If you can't, isn't it better to figure that out before you've spent a nickel than to actually go out and start and burn through a whole bunch of money and then find out?
Right. 100%.
Yeah.
I love it. Well, Henry, I think that's a wrap for this episode. And from the both of us, even though my co-host isn't here today, we want to thank you for taking the time out of your day and joining us and adding value to what we're doing on our podcast, brother.
It was my pleasure. I'm really happy to be here. Thanks.
Again, thank you all so much for listening to That Entrepreneur Life. To learn more about what Henry is working on, check out dasknowledge.com or henrydas.com to go download that free ebook. If you like what you heard today, please subscribe to our podcast and don't forget to download our free ebook, The Success Mindset, at thatentrepreneurlife.com. Thanks for continuing to support what we do as entrepreneurs. And don't forget to join us next week for another episode of That Entrepreneur Life.
Thanks for listening to That Entrepreneur Life podcast. Be sure to visit thatentrepreneurlife.com to join the conversation, access our show notes, and discover our fantastic bonus content. Don't forget to join us next week for another episode as we continue to add value. Until next time.